Welcome back. This is Lace with Gumption, episode 204, The Watchful Eye. We are Lace with Gumption. We recap DC TV in a flash. My name is Jessica, and I'm here with...
May.
And Tatiana.
And you can also be here with us if you want to send us in your feedback at ladieswithgumption@gmail.com on the episodes, or you can follow along with us when we live tweet on Twitter, at DCTVGumption, or you can send us Ask in Tumblr, ladieswithgumption.tumblr.com. As always, there are a variety of ways you can interact with our podcast on a variety of different platforms. But particularly, if you are a Patreon, we want to thank you for helping us keep our podcast afloat. And if you are curious on how to become a patron, you can go to www.patreon.com/DCTVGumption, where you will get these episodes 24 hours in advance of the general public. But you'll also get additional bonus content. So we do a lot of the premium shows in the DC and Marvel universes. We do a lot of Netflix shows. We are going to do The Last of Us. It's on HBO right now. When that season finishes, season 4 is the second part of that season just dropped. So we'll have something for that when it's over. We got a request to do Cocaine Bear.
As we should.
So if you want to talk about a bear on cocaine and listen to my theory about how this is an allegory for other things, then, you know, check us out on Patreon. I'll save that tidbit for later. In the news, there was a lot of, like, end of the Flash kind of news, end of an era type situation. Candace Patton, she had a couple stories, you know, about her last day of filming, you know, when she was, like, crying, very emotional. She even... went through a box that was put together by Candy Canes United and Aww. Sky the Artist. Big shout out to those ladies. They gathered together money to get Candace gifts. I think they got her a total of like 6 different gifts from flowers to balloons. Every time that Candace posted something about something she received, it was from these ladies. Just really nice way to kind of wrap up fandom and show our love to Candace for being Iris over the last couple of years. I think she also did like a post with like Iris' wedding rings and, you know, saying goodbye to those. So what was that like for you guys when you saw it?
I think it was like nice. It was like bittersweet, like to see that. Because at some point, I think a lot of us just thought like she was just totally over it. So I'm like, I guess she's not like totally, totally over it. There's still, you know, there's still some feelings there. The spark is still there a little bit. So it was nice. It was like a kind of like a closure for all of us, I hope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say it's hard just because I know that even like, you know, with any job, even if you don't like it as much as you did at the beginning, mm-hmm. there's always gonna be like mixed emotions leaving it behind after you spent so long there. So I feel like she was feeling that and you could kind of tell. But it was really hard to like see her stories and see like the rings being put away and all the gifts and things like that. And kind of like, you know, what she's meant to all of us over all of these seasons and like really what we stayed for when things got really bad on the show. So it's very emotional and probably going to be even more so when the show actually like wraps for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's definitely emotional because so much of, you know, her acting career and a lot of the cast, their acting careers is like built in the show. So even if it was not always pleasant at times, it's a huge part of their identity. Mm-hmm. So, and speaking of that, then you have Grant's last day of filming post, which he posted his on Tuesday of this week. I think he did like 1 or 2 posts, and his long text was, you know, saying goodbye to the show, thanking the cast and crew. He mentioned specifically the directors, David Rappaport casting, Berlanti, I think Todd Helbing. I feel like he mentioned Eric in there somewhere, but just like a lot of, it's like an Oscar speech or like an award winning speech where like I have to go down and thank all of
them. Oh yeah, yeah.
I'd like to thank my cast, my crew, the directors, David Rep for casting me and believing in me. What did you guys
even do? When I didn't always believe in me.
Yeah. I also had the video of him like hanging up the flash suit for the last time. So how was that in comparison?
The way that you set him up. Poor Grant.
It's not that it was not emotional, but yeah. What are your thoughts and feelings?
You know, freedom. I'm glad that that it seems to have ended well. You know, at least they went out with like someone still watching, and you know, people were like, "Aw, Grant setting up the suit." Still, like, currently the best Flash, so good for him. Sure. And probably going to stay that way after.
I mean, it was less emotional. I felt like the caption was fine, if a little bit detached. Like, because we've seen what the types of things that he's posted in the past and how much of an emotional person and sort of like an impulsive person he can be occasionally on social media. And I felt like this was just something he definitely pre-planned to make sure that he mentioned who he needed to mention without causing any, you know, drama. Which is
probably for the best.
Like
probably was. Probably
fine. He didn't want to put his foot in his mouth, and I understand. But at the same time, I feel like he was more over it than Candace was. And it was that was weird to me. So, I don't know.
Well, the series, so now we can all be over it on May 24th. That's when the series finale is set for that date. I don't know if we want to talk about Leanne, do we?
Let's do it, because I have thoughts.
Okay. May has thoughts. So, you know, speaking of being over it or not over it, we've been trying, like the fandom has been trying to get somebody to do a Grant and Candace interview at least one more time before the season ends. And we all thought Leanne was our only hope. But she recently revealed that she has been trying, but one person of the Grandest pair has declined to do it, or their people have declined them to do it. And she's thrown a little bit, she threw one of them under the bus. So basically saying, we would do it, I'd want to do it, and one person of this team wants to do it, but the other person doesn't want to do it. So there. So who do we think that one person is? And what do we think was her intentions behind putting it out there that one half of your team is holding out? What are your thoughts? What are your theories, May?
I think that she put it out there. I don't know, even know if it was like just being frustrated, but like, I think that saying someone in the picture did not want to do it is putting the onus on fans then to kind of like shame them into wanting to do it. You know, it's like pressure, like, why don't you want to do it? And blah, blah, blah. So I feel like that's what she was trying to go for, but then she deleted it probably because she was like called out for being unprofessional or whatever. But I do think that, and again, I can't confirm or deny who was the one who rejected the interview. But I do think I have an inkling, and I feel like I could be correct, especially after his Instagram posts, that it was Grant, because his avoidance of mentioning any of his co-stars by name was just strange to me. Mm. So I feel like he could, and he's, you know, seems over it and in some ways and kind of like ready to move on. So bringing that back to the interview, like he just doesn't want to have to deal with it. And he's always been the least giving in terms of public stuff with West Allen in general. Mm-hmm. Unless he's like had to do it, and you know, we know that he's fought for the ship for sure, like behind the scenes, but like in the public scheme of things, he's not right. Been the greatest leading man, and I will leave it at that.
I mean, I don't disagree with anything that May said. My take on it was definitely that she spoke out of frustration, and she just was like, probably because like the fandom, our fandom is quick to like call people out for things, even unnecessarily. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure she was like, I don't want anyone saying, Leanne, why didn't you do this? And be like, it was not me. Don't look at me. So I think that that's where it was coming from. And May is probably right that that the best case scenario would be that the fans would then redirect their rage to Wes Allen, and then one of them would relent or whatever. But of course, little did she know, and little did I know, that we would defend both of them when when one of them was in question. So everyone was like, how dare you? Also, I thought her response to our response, quote, I say our as if I had anything to do with it, but you know what I mean, was really unnecessary. Like, okay, ma'am, just don't speak, or just delete, or just be like, I speak as I find, moving on, but whatever. I thought that was definitely unprofessional of her, but I guess she's just used to people. No, I don't even know, actually, no, because she deals with the Riverdale fandom, too, and they're crazy. So I don't know what she's used to. I don't know what she thought was going to happen. But anyway, overall, I think that probably is, like, the right note to end the Flash on. It feels fitting for our show.
Messy till the end.
Messy and unwilling to service fans. Because there is nothing the cast loves more than not servicing us.
I feel like if she was doing it to kind of, like, put some public pressure on the one to relent, I feel like it's, it doesn't work if he pretends to not see it. He's not on social media. So, whatever. Moving on, just a little bit of more fun tea shade. Guggenheim is back and put himself back in the spotlight because, one, he revealed to Variety that he spent $10,000 of his own money to pull off Crisis. And then I guess this is also, it kind of flows into the fact that he is upset that James Gunn didn't call to give him a job in the DCU because of all I've done for the Arrowverse and no one's giving me a call back. And so, you know, when you spend $10,000 of your own money for a job to the company instead of them paying you, and then you're upset that they're like, okay, thank you for your money, bye. Thank you for your service. is what that kind of feels like. Thoughts on him being whiny about...
I mean, it tracks with what we've seen. He is salty. In the past.
Does he deserve to be salty? Do you think he should have gotten a call back?
I don't know about deserving to be salty. I feel like him talking about he burned a lot of bridges and spent his money during Crisis or whatever. I don't know which bridges he burned.
You said he wasted a lot of time in the Arrowverse because it didn't pay off, right? Did.
But, well, the thing is, that's funny because, like, he said he didn't lead to any opportunities, but he has something in development, I think, like, at Amazon or something like that. So it's not like he hasn't had jobs or anything like that. I do, though, think it is interesting that what he was talking about just confirmed that the DCU doesn't really want to have anything to do with what came before at all. But I also wonder... And this is just speculation, if they just weren't, like, as pleased with what he did with Arrow specifically, because he was really in charge of that show, that they just kind of didn't want him to come to the table. Because they still have Berlanti.
He's also with Legends, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, like, when you take comic canon and make a unique character like Green Arrow into bargain Batman for a show, and he also, like, tore up Green Arrow's counterpart relationship with Black Canary, destroy that, you know, put his own creation of Felicity in, not only into his show, but into everybody else's show.
And was dragged by Gail Simone for many, many years because
I feel like some of those bridges he probably burned were in WB. So, I don't know why.
I think it's interesting, too, because, like, Felicity was, like, the version of Felicity in the Arrowverse did end up appearing in the comics, but I think she was only in there for a few issues before they cut her out and kept Diggle forever. So
it's not like they never did anything for him.
Right.
I was going to say, like, I kind of get where he's coming from, but, like, if it was Berlanti saying this, not that Berlanti would ever say, I waste my time in the Arrowverse, but... like, even Berlanti has been cut out of DCU, you know? Like, they literally were like, no, no thank you for this Green Lantern show that you were gonna do. We're gonna do our own Green Lantern show now. Bye. So, like, I can understand feeling slighted by the way that the DCU has veered away. Even though much of the goodwill that DC has garnered in the last decade has been solely because of the CW DC verse.
That I get. But I guess, like, maybe he, when he said that he burned some bridges, maybe he burned bridges outside of this arena because he thought that it was going to be his cash. So he put all of
his basket
with a hole at the bottom.
Right. And that's what I can kind of, like, that kind of makes more sense to me, especially because it's like, even though he started it with Arrow, Berlanti really took over with everything else. Guggenheim wasn't really in charge of anything else. So Berlanti is the one that reaped all the benefits. Like, even though he got cut out of DCU, he's got 16 other things he's juggling. All thanks to the work he put into the Arrowverse.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe if Guggenheim had done that, then he would have something to show for it. But he didn't. And so I feel for him, but I also don't like him. So, like, I don't care. And also, he was very whiny about it. But, you know, whatever. I feel like you can have your feelings, and I understand. But unfortunately, when you say them out loud, people will mock you for them.
Sure. Very true. And then, let's see. Batman, the Caped Crusader, moves to Amazon after being booted from HBO Max with a 2-season order. So, yay for Batman.
Woo!
Moving into the episode. Red Death Part 2, we'll talk about joys, no joys, feedback. We got a lot of feedback this week as well, so thank you guys for continuing to send it in. And we'll crown a lady with gumption, and Tati is going to take us through the episode. What the hell happened?
What do you mean?
I mean, tell us what happened.
Sorry, I thought I froze. It didn't sound like the end of one sentence, but yes. Okay, so unfortunately, I was going to write out a whole nice recap, but between 3 and 4, which was my only free hour, I had to shower, and then I couldn't find my suitcase. So so there is no recap. It's just going in blind. But that's okay, because so was Eric Wallace when he wrote this storyline. So we start just, like, with the Red Death taking over the city, you know, gaining control of this world or whatever, full tilt. Our lovely police officer, whose name I've literally just forgotten, Kramer, thank you, tries to use her metapowers against Red Death. It works for, like, 3.5 seconds, and then it is not working anymore. So thank you for your efforts. Meanwhile, Barry, like, barely has any speed. Mark is fake dead until Cecile has, like, a seizure and realizes that he's alive. But the rogues don't want to go get him because they're tired and they just want to go home. So who can Barry turn to but Gorilla Grodd, his old friend, whom he once gave a little spark of speed to, but then he abandoned. And Gorilla Grodd is like, you were my friend, and then you stopped being my friend, so why should I help you? And Barry's like, because I have no money for CGI, please, 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 help me out. So then Gorilla Grodd's like, fine. You have your little speed back. So he gets his spark back. He gets to fight Red Death, who is surprisingly easy to defeat because all that has to happen is the actual Batwoman to come out. I don't know how, even. She just shows up. She's there. And she, like, takes off Red Death's mask. And then Red Death is like, no! Like, reverse Darth Vader. And gets scared away, I guess. In the meantime, Joe was going to leave, but Cecile didn't want him to, and then he realized Cecile's a hero, so he decided to stay. But then he decided that because Cecile's a hero, he is useless. And then Barry was like, you're not useless. You're like my dad and my best bro, and you give all the pep talks. And then Joe was like, that is not a good enough reason. I am still going to leave, but Cecile can visit me on the weekends. And then Cecile is like the happiest person I've ever seen dealing with a long-distance relationship. And I'm like, your husband doesn't want to live with you anymore. And you're like, oh my God, I love you so much. Sorry, not your husband. Your boyfriend doesn't want to live with you anymore. Your baby daddy doesn't want to live with you. And she's cool with that, I guess. Awesome. Mark, fake dead. He's on the brink of death. But then Keon gets a pep talk from Iris, who will be filling in for Joe, I guess, now that he wants to live in the country. And she realizes that she can find her path to becoming an oak tree if maybe she just, like, kisses almost dead Mark. just was a thought. And she had it, and she has, like, reverse Killer Frost situation, where she, like, breathes warmth into him instead of taking cold. So he wakes up, and that's awesome for her. And also, she's a better at reading emotions than Cecile, so maybe she's a meta. Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo! Which means that she's able to read that Iris is pregnant before Iris even knew about it, and before Cecile could just feel that Iris was nauseous, and then deduce that it was because of pregnancy. So that is how we find out that baby Nora, presumably, or a suddenly older baby Bart is on his way, on their way, on someone's way. One baby is on its way, and we are so happy, even though it is like 2.5 weeks early.
Woo!
I don't remember what else happened. I think that's it. Oh, Chester and Allegra. Chester was like, no, not Chester. Allegra was like, okay.
Start thinking and start
Joe is, exactly. Joe has left. That's like a death in the family. Let's make out. And then everyone has like a 3-minute conversation about the fact that this is happening. And that's great. We love that for them. And that is now the end, I think. So, what sparked Joy?
I mean, your recap was, you know, beautifully done on the spot.
Thank you.
Well, this episode was like a letdown from last week, but my joys, seeing R. Ryan again, like as soon as she just popped in and the Batwoman theme music came on, I was very excited to see her. What was her line? Like, you're just me on a bad hair day or something.
Yes! Hilarious.
Love that. just her like kicking her doppelganger's ass was just fabulous. I wish she'd stayed a little longer, but we did get some good material out of that. Even her laugh at the end once like Red Death was bested was great. Her being an Iris so West,
he's like, is it like every time, every day, and he's like, it's a Wednesday.
That was like a good kind of cheese, you know. That
it was really
like just enough.
It was corny enough to be funny.
Yeah. her being an Iris West fan, amazing, beautiful, brilliant, and being invited to the monthly brunch that she apparently has with Kara and Nia and Alex, even more brilliant. Love that for Iris, even though we will not be able to see it. The fact that it's still happening off screen is at least nice to know. I actually didn't mind there are parts of it that I did mind, but like just general like idea behind it, and not necessarily all the dialogue, but like of Iris being like, you know, you think you're useless but you're actually not, you know, was nice because she's kind of like recruiting in the new person, and you know, for so long she's sort of been called useless by a certain segment of the fandom, and no one she is not, obviously. So her telling Keon that she is like, she has something going on for her, even though she doesn't have like medical skills or powers, like that's not what makes a person, you know, quote unquote useful or whatever. So that was nice. What else? Oh my God, I'm struggling here. I actually like, I'm probably going to be like creamed for this. I didn't hate the pregnancy reveal as much as I thought I was going to hate it. I thought like for the moment, like it was actually sort of funny and how it happened, mm-hmm. even if I wished it happened differently, but like it wasn't the most atrocious thing I've ever seen on the show, I suppose, which is again a low bar. Oh my God, I thought I'd like more than this in my head. Yeah, I think that's like mostly it. But I did enjoy when like Barry was like, when did this happen with Chilegra? And I was like, you know, it's been a long time coming or whatever, because I feel like it just goes back to the thing about Barry being slow on the uptake when it comes to other people's relationships, and Iris being like, no, it should have happened a long time ago. Kind of remind me of that one scene in, I think it was like 5-5, where Iris caught on that Nora's into girls, and he's just like, what? yeah, I'll stop there.
I'll start with the pregnancy, because I agree with you that in the context of the character and the way it played out, it wasn't like horrible. And it was also like a little bit funny because, you know, Keanu was just like, oh, is that, you didn't, okay. Like, I didn't know. But I feel like more so, more than the scene itself, it's the person playing the character that delivers the information is one thing. It's the fact that this wasn't a rare occurrence where it happened in front of a team, because there are so many other milestones that happened in public places that should have been private. If this was like a rare, you know, one-off that this happened, if they had had other private moments stay private, then this would probably not have been so bad fandom-wise. But yeah, I think it was like a lot of little things, but it was not completely horrible to me either. And it was better than if it had been Cecile, because I think Cecile's delivery and that actress's delivery of that message would have been a lot more annoying than the way that it played out between Keon and Iris. And I also feel like in Keon and Iris, weirdly, have a better relationship than Iris and any of the other versions of Caitlyn. And I agree with you. I thought it was like a nice conversation, especially the way that non-powered members of the team, that seemed to be like a theme during the episode. And I thought that the Iris Keon scene was a better version of one of those scenes of, you know, someone being like, I don't have powers, I can't help. And Iris, because she is a non-powered person on the team, she has been forever since the beginning, being like, you don't need to have powers to be able to make a difference on the team. And it's just figuring out what you can do to make a difference. So I thought that was a good conversation between them. I liked Kramer, all of Kramer's scenes. I thought she was really smart to try and use her mimic powers, because I feel like none of the people in her crew knew that Kramer had meta ability. So that was a nice attempt to turn the tables. Short-lived, but very nice. And then there was like a scene where Ryan, they're in Barry's lab for some reason, but Ryan's like trying to hack the security system, and Kramer's like, you'll be able to succeed because we got an upgrade from Argus. And she was like so confident. And then Ryan's like, oop, granted, you were saying. So I thought that was funny. Yes. Oh, and finally getting our Ryan in the end of the episode, better late than ever. And I also like the little, you know, invitation to brunch. I did like that Ryan told Iris that she was like a fan of hers. And it kind of like is the callback to the previous episode when the other Ryan was like, I'm also a fan of your podcast. So it's like there's like similarities in other worlds, but this time it's a good conversation and not like an evil person trying to manipulate you. So I like the start of that friendship. I like that she's going to brunch with these ladies, super women that brunch. And then also I like that, Ryan specifically name dropped Mia, because we know that we're getting Mia, later in the season. So hopefully you pick up on that again. And be like, hey, remember when we were at brunch and blah, 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 you know? So
Iris will be joining them without the alcohol in her mimosa, but she will be joining them nonetheless. Yes.
That's all I have to say about that.
Okay. Well, I also must speak out in defense of the pregnancy reveal, because I do think it was all in the delivery. I love that Keon was just so nonchalant about it. And then it's like, oh, I didn't realize you didn't know. Oops. And also, I think I just have been, like, indoctrinated at this point. Like, I would never in a million years have expected a scene where they found that alone. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. What? The last time that maybe Iris is pregnant, she wasn't even there. She wasn't even in the episode. They're like, oh, Iris is sick. Is she pregnant? I'm not really that worried about it. Oh, she's not. Okay, bye. Like, so, this was, like, a million steps up from that. Like, can you imagine a scene where Iris is like in the bathroom peeing on a stick and Barry is like pacing outside, and then she comes out and makes a like sad face, and then she's like, "We're pregnant!" You're like, "Never, never." Not since like season.
That's too many minutes on that one scene already.
So season 5, that could have happened. That was the last time. And then it went off to Superman and Lois, and now it will never happen. So anyway, this was like the best possible version, like in this version of The Flash, that we could have gotten. It was cute. Keon, far superior choice to Cecile. All right, cool. Speaking of, yes, I also did love the little moment between Keon and Iris, that Iris just like, you know, also very like not dramatically gave her some life advice. And it seemed like they were just two like chill friends. And Keon was like, "Yes, I can be the oak tree. Thank you, Iris. I will kiss this man that tried to murder me." But I do like that they are finally doing some version of Killer Frost's powers. Because Killer Frost's powers are that she sucks the life out of you. So it is cool if Keon can give life with her, you know, like that would be awesome. And that would also go with like her plant powers or whatever, you know? So I like that. That's like fun, interesting, like opposite side of Caitlin or whatever. Unfortunately, it also means like, I guess we should just leave Caitlin dead. I'm so sorry, Keon. Or not Keon. I'm so sorry, Danielle. I'm so sorry, Caitlin fans. Like, Keon clearly already a superior choice. So anyway, aside from that, I loved Iris's outfit. I did also love the scene between Iris and Ryan. It was very, very cute that they are fans of each other, and now they're going to have a gal pal meetup in Gotham. Although, like, why Kara? I guess Kara also has super speed, kind of like The Flash, so she can just go to Gotham and hang out. But I was like, why are y'all in Gotham? Like, what is Nia doing in Gotham? What's happening? So anyway, whatever. At least Iris can now join. And that made me very, very happy. Almost as happy as if they had actually had Kara guest star herself. What else? I did. The Rogues were so cheesy, but they were very cute. I did love when Goldface called Barry a chemist. I loved the stupid little Wednesday joke. I loved when Andy
Mantis. When Goldface called the light bright.
Yes, also cute. Why can't I never remember his freaking name? Hartley. When Hartley was like, "I'm going to go be with a man I love," or whatever, "I'm not going to bother this." I was like, how cute. And then Goldface was like, "I'm going to go apologize to the Unionist." I love that shit. So that was great. What else? Yeah, I mean, overall, at least the dialogue. I saw some people complaining, like, oh my God, the dialogue of the show. But like at this point, again, at least it was like, it felt like tongue-in-cheek this time. It felt like we all know, we're all in on the joke, right? So I was like, okay.
Yeah, it wasn't like super cringy or anything.
Yeah. I was just like, all right, I see. Also very glad that we got real Ryan back, even though, to be continued in the next round. And I'm not going to lie, it did give me a little bit. When Joe was saying his goodbyes or when Jesse was saying his goodbyes, like I felt that a little. I was like, okay, I see the emotion here. Even though everything leading up to that, to be continued in the next round. Okay. So, speaking of that next round, what did not spark joy?
The list is long of, like, our joy. I, like, the whole scene between, like I said, we have, like, different vignettes of non-powered Flash team people feeling like they don't have a purpose, how that's handled differently in some situations than others. And one of those situations I feel like was not handled as well was when Joe was talking to Barry. Because, like, Joe is lamenting that, you know, Cecile is leveling up, quote unquote. I don't have a job. I don't really have, like, a purpose in this group. I don't have powers and blah, 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 blah. And Barry's response is basically, like, your purpose is emotional labor. You are the father of this group. Who else are we going to turn to with our problems? And I'm just like, That's not really a job that brings, like, you know, makes someone feel, like, wanted. Like, we bring you all of our problems. Handle all of our emotional labor, please. Like, I would not want to stay because of that, being the emotional backbone of, like, the group and being a father to everyone but my child. And the fact that that is what he's had to do. The fact that Iris has had to sacrifice her father to this group for so long. Like, at his farewell party, they didn't share any one-on-one scenes. He didn't even talk about the fact that he was thinking about retiring and moving away somewhere with her. He talked about it to Barry. Barry and Cecile are the only people that he mentioned it to. There's never been a conversation with him. I don't remember the last time, honestly, when Joe and Iris have had, like, an honest-to-God conversation hanging out together, really. Genuine, like, relationship. And Jesse and Candace have one of the best, you know, chemistries on the show for the father-daughter scenes between the two of them. So the fact that he's now leaving and they have not shared any one-on-one scenes this season is ridiculous. The fact that Joe's whole I want to leave story plot has been dragged out for 5 episodes along with Cecile's part-time superhero storyline for 5 episodes, and the having the argument about should we stay or should we go, deciding we should stay, and then having the same argument the next day, and then, you know, coming to a different conclusion than the one he came to the one before. It's just all really weird the way that they tried to do this. It doesn't really make any sense. Cecile wanting to be part-time, like last episode, she was like, I have a law practice. Like, the law practice is not cemented into the ground. You can move it. Like, I'm sure there are other places that need heroes and stuff like that. The fact that she got, when she was like trying to find Red Death, and then she was like, oh, this other person, blah, 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 who is this? And she was like so tortured and, you know, getting emotional and all this kind of stuff. I'm like, bitch, let go. Like, if it hurts that much, let go of the connection. Like, why are we doing this? And then, like, afterwards, like, when she was in the sick bay, she's like, I gotta get up. They need me. I'm like, and Joe's like, you know, I think they need you to rest right now. And I'm also like, there's nothing that serious that you need to get up and do all this kind of stuff for. It's just ridiculous again. I think another thing in that conversation with Joe, when Barry is also like down, because it was like a reverse Uno card. First, like, Joe was consoling Barry, then Barry was consoling Joe. And Barry was like, you know, I suck as a leader. And I'm like, I agree. Because he was like, you know, I guess people worried about their own self-preservation means I was wrong about them being heroes. And that was him, like, this whole episode. Like, why, you know, thought that Barry was becoming more of a leader into his final season. And there was, like, aspects of his personality that I think are very, you know, the leadership that he cares about people. But also, like, he's a horrible strategic thinker. And just, like, when you're confronted, like, the rogues are very realistic and very practical about what they should do, not prioritizing Mark, going after the Red Death, because they know where she is, and she is the villain, and she is the risk to the greater good. Or even Goldface is saying they could divide and conquer and have someone go over there and someone go over here, which would have been a better plan, because if they were distracting Red Death at CCPD, they would have more of a likelihood of saving Mark if only, like, one or two people went. But no, like, Barry was like, I don't want to do that. I want to do the most irrational thing because we're a family. And it's just like, that doesn't make any fucking sense. And the whole, like, they, like, the rogues are, like, talking all this sense. And then, but then they cave because Kiona's like, I'm going to save him. I don't have any powers. They're like, you know what? You're a brave lady. Let's do this entire plan instead, because you said so. And it's like, what in the world is going on in this episode? I don't understand. Basically, that's how I felt, like, this whole episode. I felt like it was all over the place. The introduction of Grodd. I feel like they just wanted to have Grodd in as, like, a callback, but the way that they brought him in just feels like a waste of money for CGI. Like, you have 13 episodes. I'm pretty sure that CGI budget could be spread out among those 13 episodes, not waste a bunch of it on Grodd for what? Like, it was very, I feel like you could have done something without incorporating Grodd. So I feel like that was, like, a weird side tangent into something else that didn't really fit. I feel like Ryan, we only get one scene of her as our Ryan. It's a waste. Like, once we found out that this Ryan was not our Ryan, there should have been a scene of us looking for the actual Ryan, going to the Palisades, figuring out where she was. We don't even know how she, where she's been or how she recovered. she just shows up at the end. And I feel like that was like a waste of our Ryan as a character. Because she could have been investigating. She could have helped. She would have been a great help trying to figure out how the other Ryan thinks. I thought Ryan's scenes with Barry, like the down boy, that was funny. That was a joy. But then she like extrapolates on the whole backstory with Grodd. I'm like, girl, why are you telling him all this? He doesn't need to know that. And so, again, that's just like a way that they tried to like cram Grodd into the story to make it make sense by having Ryan unnecessarily have this long villain spiel telling all of her secrets of this is how you can defeat me. So didn't like that. Of course, it's not a no joy to the extent that it has been in fandom, but it would have been nice to have like a different pregnancy storyline for West Island or have them be able to reveal it themselves. It just seems like a series, that whole final scene, a series of people trying to like one up each other. Like first is Joe, I'm going away. And then it's like Chilegra, we're making out now, we're a thing. And then finally like, oh, did you know you're pregnant? You know, it's just like the series of escalating events. Chilegra making out in the middle of a house full of crowded people. I don't know. I guess they've gotten it out of the way, but then it just feels like they're going to continue it. And I just, they had two big kisses in the same scene, and I feel like they're going to escalate, and I just don't want that. Yeah, lots of stuff. Did not really spark a lot of joy for me this episode.
Chilegra kissing never brings me joy because it's just so
awkward.
So blah and awkward, yes. I don't know if it's like the way that they're even touching each other. There's just something so weird about it to me. And I just find it so unnecessary in general. And it's like even the whole, it was the best kid, like fine. I guess, you know, Chester is the best kiss she's ever had. That's fine. Well and good. But I feel like because it's been ongoing that they could have like talked about why they were avoiding each other. And that would have been like more interesting to me.
Absolutely.
And the same thing goes with like all the other storylines in that like this episode felt really rushed, like really moving at lightning speed to try to get everything wrapped up before we move into interlude episodes that we don't need in a 13 episode season. I just feel like there was enough plot to have paced it better, because we get like Red Death in really two episodes, but we had more build up to what Red Death was doing versus like the actual final part of it. And we can blame budget all we want, but I feel like there's better ways to go around it. Like if Barry losing his powers, which is also not a joy, he could be a little bit more strategic in what he's trying to do. Like, I don't think he thinks as well as his opponents do in what they're trying to do. So it's like he can never outmatch them, or like the plot needs him to not outmatch them for now. So he just sitting around being told by all the other rogues what he should be doing. And they're right. Because I feel like, you know, Barry can't always rely on villains deciding in like a two-minute pep talk that they're gonna, you know, be good guys now. Thanks, Barry. I didn't see it like that. Like, I just feel like there's no tension in that way, you know. And I feel like we've had enough of that, but we've also had people who can also just be villains, and that's okay. Like, we need Barry to think on his feet a little bit more rather than rely on just talking them down like he did with Grodd. And speaking of Grodd, that was random. I like Grodd. I like seeing Grodd. I don't think that he fit well in this episode because it wasn't about him. It wasn't about, even like the whole crisis thing was kind of tacked on. Like, I like to see what happened post-crisis, but if we had had, again, a buildup towards that, it would have been more interesting. So it just felt like it was just 5 minutes of talking with Grodd and hoping he sees the light, when we could have just had him doing something else entirely. And I feel like because they introduced Grodd this episode, all of the Ryan hating Barry for reasons, the last episode that she was telling Iris, was really just dropped. We didn't get back to it. We didn't have them really have a major showdown other than like the last fight. But it was just really underwhelming, and the pacing was definitely off. Like, again, if we had focused more on other stuff building up to this point, it would have just been like, oh my god, what is Red Death doing? Instead, we just kind of got, like, Red Death story's ending, and we didn't really get anywhere with it. And, like, the heavy focus on Mark, I feel like if he had been a more established character, again, it would have hit different, the fact that they're really trying to save him, everyone else be damned, which is highly unusual considering a lot of times, again, when the plot calls for it, individual people get thrown under the bus to save the rest of Central City. And that's just, like, consistently frustrating. What else? Cecile, like, when she's in pain, trying to feel other people's power or other people's pain, I'm in pain watching it. it is just, it's just so much. It's unnecessary. Like, the overacting, the sense that, like, you should be feeling this so badly to the audience. And I feel like I can't feel anything at all because it's just very cringy. Cecile. The idea that, like, Cecile is just so happy to stay in Central City while Jill's like, I will raise our daughter elsewhere for 5 days a week while you can just chill here and we can see you on the weekends. Just, it's like they're separating and she's happy about it. And it's just, like, a really weird reaction to have. And I get that that's, like, yes, that's some families sometimes where one parent might live elsewhere for work. But being a hero is not her full-time job. And I feel like... It was just not good. And even, like, the whole line of, and this is something small, but I just have to mention it because it was so ridiculous. She's like, when Chester and Allegra are kissing, and she's like, I'm so glad Jenna's upstairs asleep. I'm like, it is the middle of the day. This child is 6 years old. She should not be sleeping in the middle of the day. Okay. So, yeah. And I agree. I think, like, in terms of West Allen having had moments of themselves this every episode this season, the fact that the one time we don't have that is the pregnancy announcement. So it's kind of like, come on, guys, you could have done that a little bit better. And hopefully that will not be the case moving forward. But, like, it was just one of those things where they didn't really interact that much in this episode. And I feel like we could have had a build up to that, like, to Iris not feeling well throughout the whole episode rather than just, like, the final scene. And I had one more thing and I can't remember what it was. It'll come back to me. Go forth, Tassie.
y'all had such a longer list than I did. I was just like, okay, well, I had no expectations and you met none of them because that's how we are. But I definitely, like, I don't know. One thing that was actually disappointing to me, I think, is that there are moments in, I don't know if it was Javis's performance or the way that Red Death was written or whatever, that just, it just seems silly. Like when her mask or suit, whatever, came off and she, like, did that, like, yell, like, she was, like, mad that, like, the flash got one over her. I was like, I don't believe you. And yeah. Also, you sound like a child throwing a tantrum. Like, what's happening? So that, I feel like they definitely could have done, like, had her go out with more of a bang. So that was a little bit, especially because I thought that it was, like, so much fun last week, and then this week I was like, okay, Red Death. I think it would have been cool to see the team, like, even though normally I'm like, not the team, but, like, having the team do cool things to outsmart Red Death, like we started to do with Kramer, even though she's, like, not at all involved with the team, would have been more interesting, I think, than Grodd being friendship is magic into giving Barry back a spark of his speed. Though it was, like, it was cool to see Grodd, but it feels very, like, okay, I'm going down the list and checking it twice, right? What are things that I can put in here that will make fans be like, I know that thing. I love that thing because I know that thing. So Grodd being one of them. There are other stuff that I was thinking of whilst watching this episode, but I have now forgotten. However, I will compare that to the Chilegra romance. It's like they're going through the beats of what it would be to be a slow burn romance, but there is none of the, like, I don't know, enthusiasm or spark behind it. And I don't think it's the fault of the actors. I think that if you'd put Grant and Candace in that same storyline, the way it is written for West Allen, no one would be shipping West Allen because it'd be so boring. If every time that Barry and Iris had like a big moment, they almost got together, but then they pulled back, you would just be like, okay. And then just like in one moment, they're like, this is now the moment that we will not pull back. Because even though no change, there had been no change in our character development, there has been nothing actually happening to us. We are just reacting to events around us by kissing or not kissing. So I just think it's like a very, very boring way of writing a ship. And I think that's unfortunate because, once again, I say this every single time, I'm like a broken record, but back when they were besties playing D&D, I was like, that would be so cute if they dated. And now I'm like, oh, I take it back. Don't do it. So, yeah. Too bad. Anyway, the Joe thing was so, like, why? Why did we just build up, like, the previous four episodes to Joe deciding that they were going to stay, only to now still leave? And then what was the point of having the scene with Barry? Like, what was it supposed to mean to him that Barry was like, we need you because you are the pep talker and no one else does pep talks as good as your pep talks? And then Joe's response was, actually, I only need to pep talk one person from now on. Jenna.
And so, it would have been different if we'd actually seen Joe do any pep talks in like the last four seasons. Right, I feel like we haven't seen him do it in so long.
Exactly. So I guess he was like, yeah, back in the early seasons, it's retirement time. So yeah, that was super weird. I don't know. I kind of like, I would have rather them have a storyline that actually involved Jenna, you know, and then Jenna actually being put at risk in some way, us seeing him actually how he parents Jenna, that would then make us be like, yeah, definitely, you need to go with Jenna somewhere else. But instead, like, we literally just met Jenna last week. So we're like, okay, bye.
And Arrow with like Oliver's son, like in like the earlier seasons when, you know, he kept getting kidnapped by all these other people. It's like, you need to go with your mom somewhere far away so you're safe.
Exactly. Like something like that, at least it would be like, okay, you know what? I see where you're coming from. Mm-hmm. Okay, go on. Go on. But here I'm like, okay, I mean, sure, you were already doing nothing with us, so go do nothing without us. Exactly. Yeah.
I just wish like Eric's love of earlier seasons would translate in writing or like show running, because I feel like his writing is definitely stronger than his vision for the season. Mm-hmm. Which is always lacking.
Yeah, sad times. But yeah, so yeah, overall I just think it's kind of like one of those little like whimper and not a bang, and it wasn't like offensive to me, but it also just was meh, you know. I could take it or leave it. That's it. It's a shorter list for me. I'm not really mad at anything else. Oh, wait, but duh. Like, I meant, like you guys already mentioned. You know, why the heck would no one look for Ryan? Why do we not find out where Ryan was? How did she get out? All of that, which is questions unanswered for no day. But we'll just pretend, you know. Someone can write a fanfic of how Ryan got out, I guess. Because that was so weird. It just again goes with this whole like nonchalant, like no one really cares, like the characters in the show, about what's happening to other people. Caitlin's dead, that's cool, let's go dancing. Ryan's been missing for a week, I'm sure that Luke and Mary will take care of it off screen. So okay, bye. And now, would you like to reveal the feedback, Jessica?
I would love to reveal the feedback. And we are kicking off with a blast from the past because Shang is back. Or Shang.
Oh my god!
Shang!
Oh my god, it's been amazing. Amazing.
He says, hello there, lovely ladies. It's been a while. I keep telling myself to send in feedback and then forget about the time difference. He's like, I'm trying my very best. Sorry, but Mark is, it says expandable, but I think he meant expendable. Even if they did not spring an attack on Red Death at CCPD, I think it would have been a much better move to actually try and think how to counter their team instead of being so hung up over that guy. Like, he played the fool, so he's going to have to deal with his own clownery and die mayhaps. I hope the writers have a better story plot for him than to be Kion? Love interest or whatever that's going on over there. Ryan, I support women's rights and wrongs, goods and bads. I'm so glad the Flash writers gave GC a role to be evil. Really like seeing her as the villain, but the final showdown was kind of anticlimactic. I mean, the batarangs and the lightning shields were cool. It just felt very sudden. Is this really the end of Red Death? I'm confused. Are they using some sort of teleportation device? What was that fog bomb thing that looks like my bath bombs? Did I miss a new invention from the previous season? I feel like, yeah, I don't know. I don't remember where we got that one from. Barry and Joe's interactions got me feeling some kind of way. Second best pairing interaction of the show. Kara, Alex, Nia, and I have monthly brunch. What is this name drop? Did they interact at all during Crisis? Is like, I don't think they did, actually, because Ryan wasn't there during Crisis, was she?
No, but maybe, yeah. It would have been cool if they had done that in Armageddon, where they had been like, oh, yeah, our other besties, Nia and Kara.
She was in one of the crossovers, though, wasn't she? Like the
Ryan was in Armageddon.
Ryan was in Armageddon.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Nia I don't remember.
It says, I would assume Kara and Iris would be closer than Kara and the Batman. Exactly. My point. I feel like Iris should have been in brunch. Like, she should have started brunch with Kara, and they should invite Ryan. Hello. Anywho. Sean says, I should have gotten the Batwoman Supergirl crossover like I deserved. I do not ship Chester Allegra. Like, the chemistry is not giving. Ladies, I don't know what else to tell you. Then the Keon, whatever her name is, I'm still not understanding what this character is supposed to be, but she feels like she's both Frost and Caitlin. Her Dr. Caitlin side came out knowing Iris is pregnant, and her Frost side came out when she healed Mark by manipulating the temperature. Does she just have amnesia? And then Iris is pregnant! El Mayara Shang. And then we have Vivian. Hello, ladies. Hope you're doing well. I'll keep it brief. My rage of what happened in this episode and the profanity I want to use may get me banned, so who saw my thoughts and then see myself out.
Scream.
Likes. How well Javicia portrayed the crazy, aka Red Death. She did an incredible job with the material she was given. Iris West, always Iris West, even though she had to encourage the new version of Caitlin 34.0 and counting. The show remembering that Kramer had mimicking powers and letting her act on them. Kramer immediately escaping through the vent as soon as she saw Red Death was distracted. Barry and Iris figuring out things together. Running fighting scene between Barry and Red Death gave them an opportunity to give Barry another accessory like the speed shield that he never had or used before. So whatever convenience point at this stage of the series, no buildup or explanation needed. Just insert what Eric thinks is cool and run with it literally. Again, whatever. Whatever show, whatever. Joe finally getting to escape, leave while we still have some good memories of him, and also before Eric could further destroy his character. Iris looking fine as all get out. Iris finally being pregnant. The Ryan Batwoman exit at the end. I like how she raised her cape up and then was gone. Iris at least not being ignored by her own father when the pregnancy announcement was made. Usually they ignore Iris altogether, so thanks at least for letting her dad and husband hug her because no one else did. And then dislikes Barry forever losing his damn speed. Too many damn characters thrown into one episode to really get too much focus and attention and a storyline, in my opinion. Eric trying to bring back any and all villains and rogues he can think of. Keon now being the one true love that her kids can revive a whole ass dead man. What the fuck was that about? Like Marcus likes Sleeping Beauty, and it's just like, okay. Five, Barry still needing a pep talk before he can act or do anything. Barry and the gang still welcoming backstabbing, and will only turn on you for less than a dime, Mark, into the fold. What do you have to ever do to be excluded from this Kumbaya family of heroes? Keon and her heels are alive with music, reveal that Iris is pregnant. They can never have anything to themselves. They blasé. The blasé way in which the announcement was made really pissed me all the way off. Barry going to Grodd to get his spark to rekindle the speed, and they're saying now Iris no longer has any speed force within her, even though it's later revealed that she's pregnant and with a baby speedster. Also, they never explain the artificial speed force that went through Iris and Red Death when Chilblain blew up the treadmill, clearly showed it entering and going through Iris. Another whatever inconsistent story point in this story. Overall, the episode seemed rushed and crowded. Better story pacing and writing would have spread the story out through 2 to 4 episodes and let 5 be the big buildup to take down Red Death and announce Iris' pregnancy. So thank you, Vivian. Sonia says, hey ladies, this episode of The Flash was really well done. And I think the thing that we were all excited about was
I think the thing we all excited about was what happened at the end of the episode, which is Iris's pregnancy announcement, but the rest of the episode was good too. Oh, so we have a new perspective.
We have a believer.
Yay.
I actually found myself disagreeing with Team Flash the whole Save Mark plot, because not only did it turn out to be a trap and lure them there, but also Hartley says it's one person versus an entire city in trouble, which I agree with. I mean, yay, Mark's alive, but whatever. Rhett Death's entire endgame was to create creepy sentient beings that patrol all around the world and killed anyone even thinking of a crime. It's kind of like what Tony Stark had wanted to do with his whole suit of armor around the world mentality, and we all know how that ended in Age of Ultron. Keon kissing Mark and waking him up was weird. Like, non-consensual kisses really gross me out, especially when the receiving party is literally unconscious and can't provide consent. Loved Iris talking with Keon about her place on the team, helping out with the gun because she has no powers, but I really wish she would have also brought up her journalism and writing about the things that are happening to keep the city safe and informed, but whatever, it was still a nice moment. Laughed out loud where they were all, oh my God, Cecile's all powerful because they thought she found Mark despite not going in to find him or whatever, but in reality, Red Death placed Mark in her mind to lure the team there. Like, come on, Cecile can't tell she's being tricked. Are her powers really that good? That is a good point. Facts. Love Joe and Barry scene, as Barry told Joe he matters to them and whatnot, but I really felt the do you have a daughter, Joe? When he told Barry that they wanted to move before telling Iris. Also, the scene would have made more sense with Joe and Iris since talking about they're both non-powered yet help the team a lot. Grodd's storyline was interesting, and hopefully he actually stays a hero. Real Ryan showing up was amazing, and the fight scene was spectacular. Can't believe Joe and Jenna are moving. Why can't they take Cecile with them? Jalegger kissing and Iris being like, about effing time, was hilarious. I know the Red Death storyline is done, but I'm hoping we can still see the Rogues because I love Hartley so much. Can't wait for pregnant Iris and Barry to be a crazy dad to be. Thank you, Sonia. Next up, we have Anita. She says, before I dive into the Red Death story, I'll say I genuinely miss catching up with your news recaps and predictions, ladies. I certainly did depend on them when I paused watching during Iris' prolonged banishments, and I have a feeling that I'll need to rely on you again because what in the actual Karen was Erica for the last 2.5 minutes? Yes, I'm calling Erica Karen, more so than Keon because he controls her actions. Just about everything, and I mean everything that any reasonable woman would want was ruined for Iris in this course of the show. Yet he found a way to deprive Iris of even the knowledge of her first pregnancy, ripped away and blurted out for the whole team by an unnatural, selfishly created lab experiment with no hope of being a decent, useful, or clearly drawn character. The issue here is how thick Eric is. Caitlin Killer Floss could have worked as a character if she were written with skill. As a viewer, I don't have to like her, but I should understand her usefulness and what makes her tick. But that was the last few minutes. The run-up was a confused mess where Ryan was the main good thing. Javicia does not miss everything from her rage boiling over in Barry's lab to the lightning fight in the street were delights. Chester and Iris were me and being starstruck. I forgot how much I missed the Batwoman theme until Ryan came swooping down to whip Red Death. Loved her trash talk and the fight scene was almost as good as on the old show. But alas, Javicia couldn't carry the last few episodes. If we were to plot an alternate story based on some of the 2-episode arc main points, like powering the cosmic treadmill or finding Red Death, Iris and Allegra could easily come through with no need for Cecile, Mark, or Keon. Allegra and Eric Wallace creation, I believe, controls and manipulates electromagnetic energy. That's what her fandom page says anyway. Either one is a major power source and she would have been a better hostage. Barry and Chester would care if Allegra were snatched and forced into it, which would also be a catalyst for Chester and Allegra's relationship somehow. Making Barry lose his powers on the treadmill and sit around coming up with a weird solution was an old hat. Let's see. As for fighting Red Death, Barry's instructions to search for a lot of hate was so ridiculous. Isn't there always a lot of hate in Central City, like in Iron Heights? All the bars around town, the private clubs with fake friend housewives and business people. Eric just went with this plot to push irrelevant people when a showrunner, Eric, should have had the vision and the backbone to make casting cuts. Rod is always a treat, but the episode was all over the place to the point that I couldn't follow how he held on to the spark without ever using it to jumpstart his cognition and reconstitute his tribe. Joe's conversation with Cecile got on my nerves. when he said being a parent was the most meaningful thing he had ever done, and Cecile with two whole daughters just sat there with a polite smile. Why did they give two kids to that woman and then write her treating him as an afterthought? I really hope that Iris drives her belly over to Gotham for her mocktails with Kara in them. Lord knows Keone and Cecile have no clue how to help her de-stress through her pregnancy, and Allegra can only do so much alone. Not planning on watching the next episode live. Stream it maybe a few days after finishing a book or planning a trip. The clock is running out, yet Eric made an episode that looks like filler and not even a strong-looking standalone. Not here for Eric's stubborn need to undercut Iris with his bad ideas, but I will be back in to hear how we recap it. So,
aww, thanks,
Bestie. We will watch the show so you don't have to, Anita. Joe says, did y'all hear about, yes, we did hear about Guggenheim whining about not getting a call to help create the new DC-verse. She says, sir, please. DC clearly did not like what you did with Arrow, and they clearly want to start fresh anyway. And he said he's not getting other opportunities. Not true, by the way. So that means I won't ever have to see anything from that man ever again. That's a win. On The Flash, I enjoyed a few scenes, but a lot of nonsensical stuff made the latest episode more bad than good to me. Javicia is great, and I hope DCWB keeps her in the fold for other roles. Glad to hear that the other DC ladies have brunch together. Want to say that the change to Iris' pregnancy date means we might get the Tornado Twins, but I don't want to get my hopes up. Bye for now. And then finally, we have KJ.
KJ!
Woohoo! KJ says, hello, one and all. I saw The Flash, and it was a fairly good episode with the return of Grodd and Batwoman. I like that Ryan and Iris are fans of each other. I was confused about Nia, Kara, Alex, and Ryan getting brunch together. When did Ryan meet them? Where is Kelly? Questions that he answers, KJ.
So true.
Mainly, though, the rage I felt from the last scene renders me incoherent. Not Caitlin tells Iris she's pregnant. She assumed they knew, even though Iris just said she didn't know. Only Joe hugged Iris. Chester and Allegra didn't think to walk to West Allen and congratulate them. I'm getting PTSD from the Crisis Wedding tomfoolery.
I feel that.
Important points.
Yeah.
Thank you for all the lovely feedback.
We love to see it.
Mm-hmm.
So, now that we have been fed back, do we have any predictions for next week's standalone? Because there's not even, like, we don't even have, like, a thing to start with. You know what I mean? Like, it's quote-unquote over. There's going to be an interlude, and then we're going to have, hopefully, Cobalt Blue. I guess that's my prediction. Eddie's Cobalt Blue, and that's what the story will be about. And it will be just as exciting as this one was.
Huzzah. I do think I hope if they're going off to, because it said in the recap or the synopsis that they're going away to plan their new life, so I do like the theory that maybe they go see Joan and she can be Iris's doctor and make sure that everything is like good, because that'll give them a reason to go off screen. And also, we like Joan, and we think that Joan will deliver a health baby. So
that'll be awesome. I'm not going to lie to you. I definitely thought that you meant Joni for a second, and I was like, she's already a doctor? It's been so long. But anyway, yes, let's go, Joan.
She could be, for all we know. We haven't heard
exactly. We have no idea.
I don't have any predictions.
I did the synopsis for Nia's episode just came out.
Oh.
How about that?
It's going to be the 7th episode?
March 29th, so whatever episode that is.
Woo!
But
they're skipping 1 week, right?
Yes, they're skipping the 22nd. So coming back on the 29th, Iris is visited by Nia Nall as she needs Iris's help. When Iris and Nia fall into a fever dream and explore different possibilities for their lives, Barry, Chester, Allegra, and Cecile desperately try to help them.
That actually sounds fun.
Yes.
I can't believe this.
A summary I'm excited for.
Yeah.
Amazing. That's why I said it's like they're the whole plot, basically. If they're
other guys trying to help them. The subplot is Mark and Keone. So Mark entertains Keone, but they have different ideas of what is fun, leaving Keone to feel like Mark is trying to make her something she is not.
Wow. So basically they're dating. Oh, Lord.
Yes. So, that is a thing.
Anyhow. Baby Jesus. Okay. So that was
he'll
fun.
Be like, "Shit, you saved my life, and that's why I must date you now."
Yep.
Give
now,
me the kiss of true
he
love.
He is definitely more interested now that he thinks she has powers for sure.
Well, yes. So, do we have a Lady's Gumption of the week this week?
I feel like I can't even say Ryan because she was only there like a half a second. I was going to say Kramer.
Yeah, I was going to say Kramer too. Because she tried and she didn't have it back up at the time. She just, and it reminded us that she did have powers and now she's going to go live happily ever after with Joe 5 days a week until she's <Joe.
laughs> Bless me.
I see Kramer too, just because she used her powers at the appropriate time and she was smart, thinking on her feet. She was doing it by herself, one woman team. So, yay, Kramer.
Yeah. I support. Yay, Kramer, indeed. It was hilarious that Kramer would be the lady with gumption. But you know what?
It's hard out on these streets, man.
When you are given lemons, you make lemonade. Although, yeah, I guess I would give Ryan the, like, honorable mention for hopping in and
for saving up. The
day. Exactly.
Oh, yes.
You get the participation award. You showed up.
Yep. The participation award, exactly. All right. So thank you guys for your kind ear, lending a kind ear to listen to us. And we will see you again next week at some point, maybe, because we will be, traveling and whatnot. We'll see when things come together. And what else can I tell you? You can find us at ladieswgumption.tumblr.com if you'd like to send us some asks, or ladieswgumption@gmail.com to send us feedback for the next episode. And if you join the Patreon, then you can request things like Cocaine Bear for future episodes. And finally, of course, find us at DCTV Gumption on Twitter, so that you can follow along with our live tweets when we tweet them. Thank you all, and good time of day.
Bye, everybody.